JISC e-learning show podcast special. Derek Longhurst works for Foundation Degree Forward. He started out by telling me his impressions of where practitioners were at during the Lifelong Learning Symposium.
There was a sense, I think, from quite a few of the delegates that they were lucky if they had a line manager who supported them and a senior manager or senior management who supported them, but quite a lot of them were working in relative isolation.
Yes.
And that's a very significant issue for higher education in the sense that if you're going to move seriously into work-based learning and its delivery for employers, there needs to be a cross-institutional culture and a staff development strategy that enables experience and good management of work-based learning to be developed across the institution rather than being reliant upon enthusiastic individuals. The point about JISC and the initiatives issue was that there was some sense, at least from some of the delegates, that when the money dried up from JISC, then so too did the project. And so there is a significant issue there for JISC about embedding and evaluating projects to ensure their sustainability beyond the lifespan of the particular funding arrangements, I think.
So you're talking about a culture. What do you mean by that culture? Several people have raised this issue.
Yeah. Well, in a way, if I step back for a moment to generalities, much of higher education has been based traditionally on subject disciplines. And those disciplines construct knowledges, subject benchmarks determined by peer groups of academic communities. And even interdisciplinary programs are largely defined by the boundaries established by those academic communities. So a lot of higher education in the past has been based upon discipline-led knowledges and their transmission to students, and to a kind of focus on the conceptual and theoretical understanding, if you like, that is necessary for a graduate in a particular subject area. Now, the issue is there's a quite deep-rooted issue here, and that is that fairly obviously the university is no longer necessarily the predominant site of knowledge production within a knowledge economy. There are all sorts of sources of knowledges that are being generated in the 21st century. And so, in a way, work-based learning is to do with constructing the workplace as a knowledge production site, just as much as the lecture theatre, if I can put it that way. And it's important that at higher education level that those people who see work-based learning as being something to do with training, if I can put it that way, or some kind of on-the-job development of occupational skills, recognize that work-based learning at a higher education level is much more than that. It's much more to do with the development of knowledge, understanding, and reflective practice, making it an educational enterprise, not just, if you like, seen as a training activity. So I think one of the things that is important about work-based learning is that it is challenging to the structures, systems, procedures, cultures of higher education institutions in many different ways.
And you're saying it's a challenge too, but you seem to be convinced that higher education should be engaging with that challenge.
I think that's right. And my reason for that is that higher education very commonly suggests that it produces people who are critical, analytical, able to think creatively, enterprising, and so on. And I think work-based learning has its place in being a very distinctive form of learning development that does actually deliver many of those values that higher education, the higher education sector holds dear, if you can see what I mean, privileges, if you like. And so in many ways, what we're looking at here is the development of work-based learning that's based upon partnership between an employer, the employee or the learner, student, whatever terminology you prefer, and the institution working together to develop an innovative and distinctive form of higher education provision that should be regarded as of an equal status, at least, to more traditional approaches, more traditional kinds of higher education. So I think there's a way in which, in the 21st century, within the context of a knowledge economy, work-based learning is very much in line with what most universities would regard themselves as being set up to deliver, I think, to employers.
But are they talking the same language?
Often not. You have put your finger quite on a very significant issue here, is that much of higher education is permeated, as in many other sectors, many other walks of life, permeated with its own acronyms and jargon and so on. And in many ways, the organizational culture that needs to be developed within an institution is to recognize where employers may be coming from and where there may be things that institutions have to learn from employers and other organizations that they're working with in partnership. So there does need to be, at the heart of work-based learning, a willingness to engage with different conceptual approaches. Let me give you an example, I think, that is significant here, and that is that if we compare the work-based learning that I'm talking about with, say, sandwich courses and placement experiences in the past, very largely those were unaccredited or not assessed at all, or they might have been subject to say, for instance, a sandwich or a placement program where the student had to pass it, but it didn't actually count in relation to their honors degree classification. Well, what we are talking about now is a work-based learning that's actually integrated into the programs, into the experience that students have, whether they're mature students, adult students, employees, or if you like, conventional 18 to 25-year-old students. And there is a set of issues around that as well. So I think in terms of the work-based learning that we're talking about, it is about seeing it as something that is significant in terms of learning, a learning opportunity to foster independence, and that is focused perhaps less on subject knowledges or conceptual knowledges, and as much on providing employees and students with the opportunity to develop that conceptual knowledge, but to do so in a way that changes and blurs the conventional attitude to theory and practice. There's a kind of way in which work-based learning fundamentally challenges the relationship between theory and practice, and sees both as, if you like, integral to each other, as opposed to you learn the theory as a graduate, and then it's up to you post-graduation to go out there and apply it in whatever way you see fit, if you see what I mean. So there's a kind of way in which work-based learning is delivering something in terms of what higher education understands by graduateness. And clearly for employers, what they expect from higher education are creative, analytical, enterprising graduates who can engage with a contextual understanding within the workplace and the cultures of the workplace. And so, in a sense, it's that engagement that is very exciting about the potential of work-based learning in terms of what some would call in the academic jargon, I guess, a pedagogy, and indeed some others would call it an andragogy, in the sense where there's more of a focus on partnership in learning rather than, as it were, teaching students in the more conventional modes.
Derek, so, I share your enthusiasm. I absolutely share it. But let's get real. Mm-hmm. We're in the deepest recession probably since the 1930s. Mm-hmm. Now, one, why are employers now going to be spending money on higher education for their workers? And secondly, universities have got young 18-year-olds queuing up at the doors at the moment. Why are they going to go into this huge culture change when they've barely got funding for all the normal entry students that they get?
I agree that those are absolutely key questions. And I have to say that I think the second is a more difficult one than the first. And that may seem surprising. We have found that with this recession, there is a very noticeable difference amongst many employers in many different sectors. Now, you are largely talking about the large employers, but essentially, we have repeated evidence, substantial evidence, that those employers want to retain their best staff and recognize that retaining their best staff and actually coming out of the recession more competitive and more, if you like, able to deal with the challenges post-recession, they are looking to an investment in education and training rather than just simply cost-cutting exercises. They recognize that if they lose their best staff in the context of the recession, it will be very difficult for them to recover that loss. And so, unlike previous recessions, and in a sense, I don't want to exist in some kind of cloud cuckoo land, but in previous, and there are obviously people currently on a monthly basis being made redundant, but certainly we have found that employers are now aware of the fact that investment in education and training may actually be a benefit to them and save them, if you like, save them for the future in terms of their operation. So I think there are some genuine answers to the first question.
And the second?
Obviously there are the small and medium-sized enterprises, which is, you know, a difficult area. But again, that's quite variable by sector. And another important aspect that I'll just mention in passing with the recession is that there are some sectors that are still continuing to do very well in the context of the recession. There are some sectors that are much harder hit, such as engineering, construction, and so on. But there are some sectors where employers are still seeking to recruit appropriate level of staff. The second question you raise is a significant one for the higher education sector, and it partly addresses the issue of policy and funding. The current funding model is not flexible enough to encourage the kind of work that we've been talking about. So institutions are doing it, to an extent, somewhat against the grain, developing, as you will know, distance learning programs, off-campus programs, managing programs in a range of workplaces is an expensive and time-consuming business. What is also significant here is that for many institutions, there will be a demographic downturn in the younger generation age group entering higher education post-2010. So while there are institutions who will continue to do well in the context of attracting younger students, there are others that may find it more difficult in the next decade. So some of them are motivated to look at alternative markets, if you like, alternative forms of higher education. However, it is undoubtedly the case that the business model for most institutions still favors on campus, full time, 3-year traditional honours degree programmes, and that is what is funded by the Hefke funding model. In other words, I think there is an urgent need to look at funding models that are more flexible, that are encouraging to part-time students and to employers and employees to enter into an engagement with higher education. And certainly that is a significant issue that needs to be confronted in one would hope, in the government's current review of higher education. Can I also make just one other point here, but why should institutions do this? We firmly believe that it is not just about some kind of very instrumental approach to slotting people into jobs, if you like. And sometimes it's characterized like that, and it's sometimes characterized as working with employers is a threat to institutional autonomy and so on and so on. We actually have a strong body of evidence that there are many people who don't see 3-year on-campus higher education as for them. And they often are people with qualifications who could go on into higher education, but choose not to do so because they want a different kind of higher education experience, and one that is more work-based and that is supported by an engagement with an employer. And so there is a whole issue here around widening participation and diversity in higher education that institutions need to face, that whilst much of the very valuable work has gone on in widening participation access over the last 20 years, significantly broadening the scope of higher education in terms of engagement from different social groups, that nevertheless work-based learning and developing partnerships with employers can add a different dimension to much of the work that has been focused on keeping young people in school and college and on into university, which has been the dominant trend, if you like, in terms of widening participation.
So it's a new agenda in terms of that widening participation, as well as, of course, a new approach to knowledge development.
Yes, absolutely. And it is something, I mean, it's pretty self-evident, and that if you can develop a form of higher education that is attractive as an to different social groups and individuals and so on, that you will draw people into higher education who don't see the kind of on-campus status of being a student for 3 years, doing an academic honours degree, as being what they want to do. The evidence base is that if we take the foundation degree as an example, and clearly that has to have employer engagement and work-based learning is integral to each of the programs. It's interesting that Hefke's statistics demonstrate that the foundation degree, especially in its part-time modes, attracts more people from low participation neighborhoods, more women returners to the employment market, and in terms of age and gender is very significant in terms of the people it's attracting into higher education.
Okay, we've managed to talk for 20 minutes, Derek, and haven't mentioned technology the whole time. But this is the e-learning program.
Yeah.
Where does technology fit into all this vision?
Well, I think it's variable. When I say variable, I don't mean in terms of quality. I mean, in a sense, I think technology can support very importantly work-based learning, and in lots of ways can be very integral to that whole experience where you have people, as we are currently, speaking at a distance from each other. Consequently, it creates communication channels, opportunities for discussion and debate and exchange across different parts of the country and different kind of communities of learners who may be operating in at a distance from each other. And that's an important aspect of what technology can do, not just a kind of two-way process between an academic tutor and a student in the workplace or an employee. It's actually about the employees themselves or the students on a program being able to establish their own communities. If I can give you an example of an FDF initiative, the technology has been absolutely central to the retail foundation degree program that we have developed for that sector. And much of it is supported by e-learning, distance learning materials, and so on, so that you have people who are working all year round in various retail contexts, whether it be Tesco, Asda, Booth, whatever. And so they have an experience which is supported by trained mentors in the workplace, by e-learning materials and distance learning packages, by residentials, and by an academic tutor who is an advisor supporter during their experience. So a great deal of, for instance, the Tesco development, Tesco piloted this program, is delivered, if you like, in store, in the workplace. And the work opportunity, the work, if you like, becomes the project, becomes the curriculum to an extent. And so therefore, in a way, the assessment, for instance, for the employer might well be to do with not just assessing through conventional criteria, but also the business impact of this program. What difference is it making to the efficiency and effectiveness of the workplace? And that's what the employer gets out of it. And that's a partial answer to your earlier question about why should employers do this. To quote one employer, this was a small employer, when they looked at this, they realized that this investment could save them more money than it would cost them. So it became cheaper for them to do it rather than not to do it.
It does assume that the workplace is a rich learning environment, doesn't mm-hmm. it? And we know that not all workplaces mm-hmm. are rich for learning.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, one essential part of work-based learning is that it is managed. And in a sense, many academic institutions, whether colleges or universities, have to get to grips with that process. In other words, if they are full-time students and on a placement, a telephone call isn't adequate. You know, how are you getting on? Are you happy? And is it going all right? Sort of thing, which has tended to be the case in the past. Workplaces have to be constructed as learning environments. And so there need to be, right from the outset, clear learning outcomes that are appropriate to a higher education program that are shared by the employer, by the employee, by the trainee employee, if you like, the conventional student, and by the institution. So workplace cultures are not always, just as university cultures are not necessarily always positive. You're absolutely right that a key element of developing high quality work-based learning is to look at how the workplace can be adapted to the needs of work-based learning as opposed to workplace training, if I can put it that way.
One last question then. Mm-hmm. If you could change something tomorrow, to mm-hmm. take one measure which you think could help take things forward, what would it be?
I'm afraid I'm going to give you a fairly conventional answer, and I do think at the moment it is an urgent one, and that is the funding. The funding model for higher education needs to be more flexible, more adaptable, to encourage institutions and to enable part-time students to benefit from higher education more positively than is currently the case. For more than a decade now, there has been a need really to look at the funding for part-time higher education and also support systems for part-time students by comparison with full-time students. And so I think one significant issue is how do we use public funding to support innovation and flexibility, creativity in developing new and distinctive forms of higher education through work-based learning and through more flexible provision, supported, for instance, as you will know, by very expensive technology. I mean, the pump priming of developing technology support for these programs is a significant cost to institutions. JISC performs an extremely valuable role in this context. I think what would be important is for us to look at how we might be able to establish what are now generally called communities of practice. That would mean that there weren't more kind of to draw together the very isolated institutional pockets of development. And that's particularly true, I have to say, I think, within the further education sector, delivering higher education.
The JISC e-learning show is a Pontedusky production for JISC. It was introduced by Graham Atwell and produced by Dirk Stieglitz. The e-learning show is licensed under by attribution, non-commercial, share alike Creative Commons license.